Will you open your Bibles with me to the 15th chapter of Luke? 15th chapter of Luke, we will begin in verse number 1. The title of this morning's sermon is The Waiting Father. And although it is addressed to fathers and grandfathers, by no means will it be limited to fathers. The message will go across the board, whether you are a father or not. God has a word for us this morning. And so we're going to begin in the 15th chapter, and the passage is one of the most beautiful, I think, in all of Scripture, to give us an understanding of the nature of God. And it is a passage that actually we call the prodigal son. And the prodigal literally means wasteful son. And as you'll see in a moment, this particular son, the younger son, wasted his inheritance from his father. But the aspect that we will focus on today in that parable is the father who is waiting. Beginning in verse 1. Now all the tax collectors and the sinners were coming near to him, that would be Jesus, to listen to him. Both the Pharisees and the scribes began to grumble, saying, "This man receives sinners, and he eats with them." So he told them this parable. What happens is Jesus tells three parables. The first parable is a parable of a shepherd who had 100 sheep, and one of those sheep goes missing. He's lost. He goes to a different pasture. In the process, the sheep gets caught in the thorns and the thistles. And what the shepherd does is he leaves the 99 in the open wilderness, and he goes and he seeks the one lost sheep until he finds it. And then the second parable, remember that Jesus is telling these parables to the scribes and the Pharisees, who would have nothing to do with the precise people that Jesus is ministering to. That is, those who are lost. And so the second parable is about a woman who has 10 coins. And of the 10 coins, one of those coins goes missing. She loses that coin. And so what the woman does is she turns the house upside down to find the coin. She sweeps the whole coin, because one coin, when you only have 10, is very valuable to you. And again, Christ is telling the parable to the religious leaders who seem to have lost sight of what is important to God. And now we begin in the 11th verse. And Jesus said, "A man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me.' So he divided his wealth between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country, and there he squandered his estate with loose living." I think you can fill in the blanks about what it means to squander your estate with loose living. Verse 14, "Now when he spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be impoverished. So he went. He hired himself out to one of the citizens of the country. He sent him in his fields to feed swine." Of course, remember that Jesus is telling the parable to Jews who consider pigs to be unclean. And so for a son to hire himself out first means that no one would hire the son. No one would hire the young man. What he has done is he has went from place to place, person to person, begging for a job. He hires himself out. And the only person that will hire him happens to be someone who makes a living with pigs. And so in the ditch is a son that he takes the job that no Jewish man would ever take. Verse 16, "He would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. But when he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread? I am dying here with hunger. I will get up and I will go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men.' So the son got up and he came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him. He felt compassion for him. He ran. He embraced him. He kissed him. The son said, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." Remember, there was something that was to follow that statement that the son already had planned. He planned to say, "I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men." But notice what happens in verse 22. Before the son can finish the statement, the father interrupts him. Verse 22, "But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead. He's come to life again. He was lost and has been found.' They began to celebrate. So the younger son and the father are reconciled. But you see, sometimes even when we come to our senses and come home to the Father and have reconciliation with the Father, it doesn't mean that we have reconciliation with everyone. So we read in verse 25. Now his older son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing, and he summoned one of the servants, and he began inquiring what these things could be. And the servant said, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed a fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound.' But the son became angry. He was not willing to go in. And his father came out, and he began pleading with him. But he answered and he said to his father, 'Look, for so many years I have been serving you and have never neglected a command of yours.'" This is the compliant son. This is the son that pretty much follows the rules. This is the son that does what he's supposed to do. He's always done what he's supposed to do. "Look, for so many years I have been serving you, and I have never neglected a command of yours, and yet you have never given me a young goat." Of course, he probably never asked for one, but "you've never given me a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. When this son of yours," not my brother, notice, "when this son of yours came, who has devoured your wealth with prostitutes," it seems the older brother has filled in the blank, and probably accurately so. "Devoured your wealth with prostitutes. You killed a fattened calf for him." And father said, "Son, you have always been with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, for this brother of yours was dead and has begun to live. He was lost and has been found." Here's the first thing that, as I look at this passage, comes to my mind. As it relates to fathers, and of course we know in the text, the father is a human father. He is an earthly representative, however, of the heavenly Father. And so in the same way that we can look at this earthly representative and see how he responds to his son, we can see how God responds to us. The first thing I think that jumps out to me on the page is that the father saw great value in the son. The father saw great value in his son. And I want you to notice that the son, back in the first verse that I began to read, in the 11th verse, 11th and 12th verses, what begins to happen is this. Although the text tells us that the son demanded his inheritance from his father and that the father gave it to him, in all likelihood, the father, or rather the son, has far more in mind than simply receiving his inheritance. In that day and time in the first century, that was a legal possibility. A son could demand his inheritance while the father was living. In fact, you see that in the book of Genesis, as one of Abraham's sons receives his inheritance while Abraham is still living. And so it's not like it was against the law. Certainly it was unusual. But the son really has something other than his property in mind. The son has come to the place in his life that he thinks he knows a better way. He's actually leaving his family. This is not so much about him receiving his inheritance. This is about a son who is disowning his family. He's come to the place where he's going his way. Now, the reason why we know that is look at what happens to the son in verse 13. Shortly after receiving his property, the text tells us, not many days later. In other words, pretty quickly, pretty soon after he received the property, the son decides he's going somewhere. He does it quickly. It's amazing. If you look at this passage, you look even all the way back in Genesis, the third chapter, when Adam and Eve partook of the fruit, they partook of it quickly. The things we do quickly so we won't think about them. Those are the things that often take us outside of God's will. They are not of God. The son quickly, not many days later, the son gathers everything. He doesn't gather a portion. It's not like he says, hey, Dad, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to go away for the summer. I think I'm going to go away for the summer and I'm going to try my living at a different occupation. I'm tired of this farming business. I don't really want to be a farmer, Dad. I think I'm going to try something else. It's not that at all, because you see, the son takes everything with him. He takes everything with him because he's not planning on coming home. And notice, he does it quickly. He takes everything with him, and he goes to a distant country. He is going as far away as he can from his father. No, you see, this is a son who has decided that he wants to go a different place. He's gotten his head on a different pasture. But notice the value that I said the father had for the son. You see it in the 12th verse. The text says, the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me. Give me the property. Give me the property that falls to me. You see, to the son, the property, the estate, is just that. It is property. It is stuff. It has little meaning to the son, but it has great meaning to the father. And the reason we can make that conclusion is because of the way the text describes it further. It first says, the son says, give me the estate that falls my way. What I receive that costs me nothing. And then it says, so the father divided his wealth among them. He divides his wealth between the two sons, but the word that we translate wealth has a different meaning in its original language. The word could better be translated as he divided his living between them. He divided his living between them. You see, to the father, what he gave to his sons had great meaning, had great value. That the property that fell to the son, to that father, was that property that he earned that year that they had the famine. Or the year that the locust devoured the crops. You see, to that father, it was property, yes, but it was something that he had earned with his blood, his sweat, and his tears. It had far more meaning to the father than it did to the sons. And so when the father gives the property to his son, he is giving of himself. He is giving something of great value, of great meaning. It goes far beyond the nuts and bolts. It includes the worth, the value, something of value to that father. And because it is valued, and because his son is valuable, he gives him his share. Gives him all of it. You see, each of us have things of value. And when we value our children, it's almost as if in the daily choices that we make in life, we show them what their worth is. Yesterday, I was preparing this sermon. And my oldest son, this weekend, he and his wife moved to Northern Virginia. And so Debbie and I are keeping the grandchildren. So yesterday afternoon, I'm sitting in my den, and the grandchildren have gone down for a nap. And what happens is that Jade, my granddaughter of, I think, five-ish, four-ish, comes downstairs. Jade comes downstairs, and Poppy, I'm working on this point. I'm working on this particular point. Jade comes downstairs. She's got her snuggly. Hair's all, you know, in her face still. And she comes running to Poppy. And now I am faced with a decision. Do I put my sermon down so I can pick Jade up? Which will it be? Well, I put something down of value, something of worth, to pick something else up more worthy. So I picked Jade up, put her in my lap. What was that? It's communicating worth and value. Fathers, we must communicate worth and value to our children. We must communicate to them that we believe in them. You see, I believe this father believed in his son. When you read the 15th chapter of Luke, what you see is you can look and you see the whole story. You see how the son demanded his estate. You see that the father gave it to him. But at the moment that the father gives the property to the son, what is the father thinking? Because you see, in the parable, he doesn't know that the son is going to be the prodigal. And so he believes in his son. He takes something of worth and value and he gives it to his son because he believes in his son. How does the text go? Psalms 127, children are a gift from the Lord. Like arrows in the quiver of a warrior, so are sons to his parents. So are children to their parents. Like arrows in the quiver. Numbered. It has a certain number. I know the quantity. I know how many arrows in my... They're value and worthwhile to me. I believe in my children. We must communicate that they are valuable, they are worthy, that we believe in them. And I think this father did just that. It was not in the toys that child received, but it was in the things that the father put down so he could pick up. I think the father saw great value. I think the father believed in his son. I think he saw the best in his son. Thirdly, I think the father equipped his son to succeed. I think the father taught the son about responsibility. You say, well, wait a minute, Pastor Kip, how do you get responsibility in this text? Notice what the text says, that after the son goes to the distant country and spends everything that his father has given him, all the father's precious blood, sweat, and tears, he spends it. And what the text says is that when he's in the pen with the swine, the text says that the son comes to his senses. He comes to his senses. If the text is telling us that he comes to his senses, it seems to me that says that there was a place where the son thought differently than he is right there. There's a place where the son thought the way he should think. Well, how did he learn how to think but from his daddy? The son even says, I know what I must do. I must get up. I must go back to my father, and I will tell him, let me become a slave. He doesn't say, I'm going to go back to my daddy and see if he'll put me up for a while for free. No, he says, I'll go back and be a slave. You see, it is as if the father has taught the son that he is responsible for his own actions. Because you see, otherwise the son would have said, I will go back and I will be a freeloader. I'll go back and I'll live in daddy's house. I'll eat daddy's food. I don't need to pay daddy rent. I'll just stay a while. That's not what he says. You see, we have this concept in the modern day that when our children stumble all over themselves and their actions, that what parents are supposed to do is just bring them back home, let them be freeloaders. I think if that's the way we think it means to teach a child responsibility, we need to look at this text. Because this text says the son said, I'm going to go back and be a slave. Where did he get that sense of responsibility? Because his daddy taught it to him. This past week, I was in my office, and two of the children in our church, they won't throw football. So here's what we do. They stand at the door outside my office, and I sit in my chair, and we throw the football. And here's the first thing I said. Now remember, and most of you have already heard this story. You remember that once Pastor Kip throws a football, you are responsible for your face. So if Pastor Kip throws a football, you make sure it doesn't hit your face. That's your responsibility. I'm only responsible to throw the football. And I will not throw it too hard. I will throw the football. You are responsible for your face. And so what do? They make sure that ball doesn't hit them in the face. This father taught his son he was responsible for his face. And so when he came to his senses, the first thing he remembers is he's responsible for his face. So he's not going to go home and be a freeloader. What he's going to do is he's going to go home and become a hired hand. The father equipped his son to succeed. He told him about responsibility. Yesterday, what happened was that the grass needed to be cut. And so what happens at my house when the grandchildren are there is they want to ride on the lawnmower. So what we did was Carson was first. He's my oldest. And Carson sat on the seat, and here's what I did. I took my hands off the wheel. And Carson drove the lawnmower, and he is steering it the whole way. And I said, Carson, make sure that this wheel right here, the left wheel is on the line where we need to cut. You keep the wheel right there. See, I told him how to cut. I said, you take the steering wheel, and you turn it. And then what we did is we went round and round and round the yard cutting the grass. But you know what happened? Here's what I did not do. I did not, once I showed him where he was supposed to cut, I didn't keep adjusting the wheel when he ran off course. Because you see, if I kept adjusting the wheel, he would not have learned just a little bit about responsibility. So what we did is we went all the way around the yard. We cut the whole backyard. And then I said, okay, Carsey, let's go find where you missed. And now we go back all over the yard, finding this little edge right here we missed, finding that little edge we missed. In other words, what am I saying? I taught him how to be responsible by letting him drive the tractor, but then bringing him back to what he missed. And so he saw that what he missed was his responsibility. We dads must teach our children about responsibility. We must give them the tools to do so. To me, the father gave him the tools. He gave him the property. He believed in him. He believed that his son was going to use it. Even if there was a risk that he would waste it, he gave it to him. He taught the son an occupation. How do we know that? Look at the elder son. He's out in the fields working when the younger son comes back. These men are working. These are not children. These are grown men at this point. And so the elder son is out working in the field. The younger son would have been taught the same thing. They would have been taught about a work ethic. They wouldn't have been lazing home every day playing video games. He gave them a work ethic. Showed them how to work hard. Showed them about responsibility. I don't think for a moment they didn't know their ABCs. He gave them those tools. But there's something else that he did. He gave them a spiritual heritage. This past Friday night, I was blessed. We had our child care center graduation program. And here's what I saw. I saw the children reciting their ABCs. Heard them spelling their names. And then you know what I heard and watched? They had a Bible verse. Every single one of those children quoted a Bible verse. Yeah, they learned their ABCs, but they also learned a Bible verse. That's the responsibility of a parent. That's the kind of things a parent ought to be doing. We ought to be teaching our children the ABCs. We need to give them an education, absolutely, but we need to teach them how to know God. This is a father who taught his son how to know God. And you say, well, how do I have that? Where did I come to that conclusion? Look at the text. Notice what the son says. The son says, verse 17, when he came to his senses, he said, How many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, but I am dying here with hunger? I will get up and go to my father and say to him, verse 18, Father, I have sinned against heaven. I have sinned against heaven. I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. How does the son know he has sinned against heaven? Because the Father gave him an understanding of who God is. How is it possible, fathers? How is it possible, mothers, for you and I? How is it possible for us to teach our children to know God if we don't know God ourselves? This is a father who is pictured as knowing God. He knows God. He knows God and he's shown his son God. So the son knows when he's gone off the pathway, he says, I have sinned against God. He doesn't say, oh my goodness, I've just made a mess of things here. You know what, I think I'm going to just start all over. I think I'm just going to go try it a different way. You know, I think I'll try this, I'll try this, I'll try this, I'll try this. You know, it's the way sometimes I hear people talking about God. They say, well, you know, I think I'll try God a little while. I'll just make him an option. I'll make God my insurance policy. You know, I just do a little Jesus. This son is lost. We would say he's fallen off the wagon. But he knows who God is because his daddy gave him an understanding that when he wasted his life, he wasted God's plan for his life. He wasted the love of God. He wasted What he knew and had taught, had been taught. I loved it a moment ago when we see children who have memorized the Ten Commandments. How is his son going to know he sinned against God unless he knows the Ten Commandments? He gave him a spiritual heritage. He taught him right and wrong. He taught him. When he says, I have sinned in your sight, what he is saying, my daddy would be ashamed at the choices that I've made. And so the son decides he's coming home. You see, it was the son's knowledge of his father that brought him home. It was the famine that drove him into the pig pen. But it was the image of the Father that caused him to get up. When he's in the pen with the swine, wanting to eat the pods, the leftover pods, what does he think of? His father. It is the image of the fairness, the rightness, the justice of his father. Where the son says, I will get up. I will get up. I will go to my daddy. It's the image that brings him out of the pig pen. The father is waiting. You see, it is in the father's house that this son discovered the land of promise. It is in the father's house that this son discovered that he would be fairly treated even when he stumbled. And let us see if the father stepped into the image that the son had for him. Did the father walk in that image? You see, the father's response is beautiful. He waited. He knew his son. He believed in his son, but he also knew that life oftentimes makes a mess of us. And so the text tells us look at verse 20. Text tells us, so he got up. I love that. It's like learning. See, until behavior changes, nothing's been learned. The son could have felt so sorry for himself all day long in that pig pen. Thinking about, oh, how bad life had done him in. Thinking about what he didn't have as have right then, or what he, how somebody had treated him wrong, or this, that, or the other. The son stops thinking about all that. The text says he got up. And where is the father? So he got up, verse 20. He came to his father, but while he was still a long way off. Where is daddy? He's standing on the porch. Every night I can see that daddy going out on the porch, looking over the horizon to see his son. And then one day, he looks, he sees his son. And do you know what the text says he does? I would venture to say that this son will never forget the day he saw his daddy run. Says when he was still far away, he saw his son and he ran. He runs. You see, he could have stood on the porch and say, I knew it. Here comes that son, and my, look, he has no sandals on. He left with sandals. Ho, ho, ho. Where is that fine robe he left with? He's robeless. Oh, just what I thought. You see, I think God put parents, daddies, with their sons so they would believe in them. Put daddies with daughters so they would believe them and find the best. Even when everybody else says, oh, that good for nothing son, I knew that was going to happen to him. Not this daddy. He's watching, he's waiting, he's looking over the horizon, and he sees his son, and he does not think one moment about what that son did. He's reconciled. His son is home. The watching and the waiting is over. He embraces him. The text says he falls on his neck. He interrupts him. He won't hear anything about this slavery business. This is my son. He gives him the best robe, the text says. Puts a ring on his finger, which was a sign of a son and a family. He says, bring the fattened calf. Because my son that was lost is found. My son that was dead is alive. The father valued the son. He believed in him. He equipped him. He gave him knowledge of the only begotten Father. And he waited and watched. Let me ask you a question. Is God waiting on you this morning? Is he waiting for you to come home? You see, the story is a story of grace. It is a story of what God does when his people turn and come to him. He is a God of grace. He is a God of love. He is a God. When we turn to him, runs to us. So if you've gotten lost, what better day to be found than on Father's Day? Let's pray.